Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. I'm your host, Kyle, and today's guest is the founder and chief investment officer of Technical Traders Limited, Chris Vermeulen. Chris has authored several books. The latest, Asset Reinvesting, is available on Amazon and focuses on Chris's revolutionary approach to investing. All right, how is that, Chris? Anything you need to add to that intro?
Sounds good.
Okay. Well, tell me a little bit about yourself then. You got started at 16, is that correct?
Yeah. So I've always kind of been an entrepreneur. My parents are entrepreneurs. I always have had little businesses and anything I could do to make money, picking apples, doesn't matter what it was growing up. I lived out in the country and cutting lawns.
What was your first business?
My first real business was the lawn barber. So my dad got me an old car and I had a little trailer and I had a barber pole on it. And I just went around and did clean people's yards and cut lawns and trim hedges. And trimming hedges was my favorite because it's kind of like part art.
Right.
And it looks really nice when you're dead.
Sounds like it was pretty good marketing, too. You had the whole, like, name, the barber pole theme. Like, that's more than most. How old were you at the time?
Probably 16, 17, 18 in there.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Not like 10.
No.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
So I did it for quite a few years. I actually built a pretty good little business. And I had my own vehicle, drove around, and did all that stuff eventually. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, so I've been in an entrepreneur family. My parents had their own businesses, and I got kind of hooked into finance in finance class at school. I always kind of wanted business. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I always wanted to be a CEO of a company. And so I took business and I fell in love with it. And there was a stock market challenge where our finance class had $100,000 to invest over a semester. We had to try and beat other schools who had the same thing. And we didn't win. We were far from it, but we still made like $180,000 or something in a semester. And I was like, that is what I want to do. Like,
right.
All we literally did was pick cool names out of the newspaper back then on the back pages. And I'm a more so of an introvert. I just like to fly under the radar. I do not like, being out in the public. And so that was my focus. And it wasn't long after that contest, my dad got this little booklet from Larry Williams in the mail about futures trading. If you don't know Larry Williams, I mean, he's like the kind of godfather of futures trading. And so I told my dad, like, let's open a futures trading account. Of course, he laughed at me because it was like back then, it was like pork bellies and everything was expensive and super volatile. Anyways, he's like, just keep focusing, learn what you want to learn. And eventually I went to college and saved up a couple $1,000s, had my dad co-sign because I was still underage to open a brokerage account. I was 18 at the time, I think. And my first trade was in Palm Pilot. I don't know if you remember those little phones with the pencil.
Remember, yep.
So I my first trade, not knowing anything really, put it all into Palm Pilot. I went away for 2 weeks to Florida for Christmas, and I came back and my account was over $8,000, and I sold it. And I was like, okay, trading, I'm good at this. Trading is for me. And at that time, like, I grew up in the country, so I didn't have TV or anything like that. So I was always out building and making stuff and all that. But as soon as I got to college in Toronto, I got hooked on CNBC and Speed Vision. Mm-hmm. And CNBC, late 90s, tech bubble was going. And I saw this guy advertising a business saying, hey, this, follow my signals, follow my trade alerts. And, you know, you just copy the trades I do. And in my head, I'm like, that's exactly what I want to do. I want to learn to trade. I want to then share it with others, you know, charge $50 a month, which is what they were charging, and have 1,000 people. And there's your $50K a month and a pretty good living. And so that's been my goal, like, ever since I was little, was to master trading. And, mm-hmm. you know, I've eventually grown it. We have like 8 different newsletters, thousands of subscribers around the world. But that's how I kind of got into it, was just through that. And of course, I ended up losing all my money. I blew up 3 accounts. Okay, my last account that I blew up was the same day I opened it. It was funded and I could actually trade it.
That must have been futures, right?
It was 100% futures. Yep. And it was a revenge account.
Yep.
If I go hog wild and really just focus, I can make my money back. And it didn't work.
Man.
So that set me back. I stopped trading for a while after that because the markets can break your brain. They'll break you down. They are difficult.
It's one of those things where you just have to take breaks, like, frequently. If you're not taking at least a week off, I think, every quarter, then you're just going to get burned out. And you don't even realize it's happening. Like, it's hard to take that time away. Like, you always feel like mm-hmm. you're just wasting money or setting it on fire.
Yeah,
So than what we typically do with our trading accounts. But whenever you come back from one of those, you always feel so much more refreshed and ready to.
So refreshed and focused and, like, not hunting for a trade all the time. You're like, I'm going to find one. Let it come to me.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely makes a huge difference. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So there's a bunch of stuff that you said in that beginning explanation of your background there that we're going to have to go touch back on. One of them is the financial class that you learned in high school. Tell me about this class, and do other schools, or are they doing this kind of stuff now? Because I went to school around the same time you did in Arizona, and I don't remember having any sort of education really like that in the stock market.
Right. So I'm in Canada, so we maybe have a bit different curriculum or different stuff, but I know they're still doing it. In fact, I just worked with a guy who works on government grants for another business that I do. And he goes, I watched one of your interviews and I heard you talk about the high school stock challenge. He goes, I remember doing that. He's like, we did the same thing. He's like, that's what got me interested in the markets was all that. So, and I know they're still doing it because I just talked to somebody last week and they said they're doing some type of stock market challenge this year. Their teacher just told them about it. So it's still going on. It was pretty straightforward. I don't remember the fine details, but we're all given money and we're supposed to do research on the companies.
Right.
And figure out, of course, the teacher's like, find out a company that's strong, has a product that you like and is growing and, you know, good earnings. And so you had to go through all that way, which is nothing that I do now. I could care less about what the company does or how much money they make or how much they lose. Some of the best trades are the worst companies in the world. So I'm a pure technical trader. I don't care if price is going up and it's strong. I want to own it. If it's going down, I don't want to own it, or I want to benefit from the weakness. So just give me a strong trend. And that's all I focus on now is trend analysis and money or position management, which is actually very, very vital, which most people don't want to learn or do. But you have to manage positions. You have to scale in or scale out and move stops and
have stops
and actually, like, maybe put them out there so that you don't like skip it. So many people just, you know, remove their stop as they get close. They're like, oh, I think it'll bottom.
I think we've all made those mistakes, haven't we?
Oh, yeah.
That's actually kind of fun. I'm glad that you volunteered the futures account blow up in the same day you opened it, because I was going to ask. It looked like, reading your bio, that it was like you kind of just hit the ground running and didn't really have many struggles. But it sounds like there was some adversity in those early days.
There's definitely a lot of struggles in there. I mean, I blew up the accounts. I mean, it's so devastating. It breaks. It just bends your mind. Like, I'm pretty good at a lot of stuff, especially when it comes to business and building and marketing, whatever it is. I love everything. I love doing stuff. And to go into the markets and just get get beaten up and just lose every trade. Yes. Like, you lose, you double down, you average down again and again. You're like, all I need. So the my futures trade where I blew up my account the same day was, got into an ES mini contract. It starts to go against me. I get into another one. I'm like, oh, it should bounce. And the problem was it started too late in the day. Well, the problem was I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Yes.
But I kept averaging down. I kept scaling in, right. Adding more and more. And then, of course, near the end of the day, it was a big sell-off day. I'm like, there's got to be a bounce at the close. And I quickly bought more contracts right before the close, expecting it to bounce. Instead, it just kept free falling. And it was like margin call. Everything was closed. I'm like, how did I just... Like, I just saved up months for that account. And I put money in. And then it was wiped out. And that was what like really set me back, put me like, you know, smartened me up. And I stopped trading for quite a while after that, for probably like 3 or 4 months.
Do you think that maybe some of those early successes might have hurt, like given you like a false sense of confidence maybe, and kind of led to some of these bigger blowups?
No doubt. People who try to pick a bottom and nail one, or pick a top and nail it, are the ones who usually will give it all back and then some later. So like the problem is if you try to pick bottoms, and you catch it, you make a lot of money and you're like, yeah, I'm good. That was awesome. They're super addicting. But the problem is it's super hard to pick a bottom. Bottoms like to just keep going lower and lower and lower until you can't average down anymore, until you're broke. And
what's so our favorite that's, saying around here? I think bottom pickers get smelly fingers. I think is what George taught us.
It's for sure. It's very difficult. So yeah, you definitely don't want to be picking bottoms. Now I follow trends. So I don't try to predict anything. I simply identify money flows and how strong a trend is. So I like to look at the stock market like the ocean. When the tide goes up, it lifts all boats. When it goes down, they all go down. Stock market's pretty much the same. When we're in a bullish environment, rising trend, most stocks on average should go up. And when it's going down, you don't really want to hold any stocks. I don't care how diversified you are. Generally, you just want to get out of the equities asset class and move to something different, reinvest into a different asset like bonds or a currency or even just cash temporarily.
Right.
So that's what I really focus on now is understanding the tide. Is the tide going up? Is there a short-term wave? So the way I see the markets is like I'm a surfer. So, you know, if you're walking down a Florida beach or an ocean somewhere and there's surfers sitting out there on their boards waiting past the break, they're waiting for that next set of waves to roll in those sets, right? And so the stock market has, and all assets have like 4, 5, maybe sometimes even 12 waves, depending on the asset classes, rolling through the markets every year. And so I wait for those generally in cash, in a cash type of position, just earning interest, and then hop on those waves when they roll up. If they meet our criteria, is in one of the asset classes we like, we hop on, we ride that wave. And the nice thing about catching a strong wave is you also know when something strong is starting to get weaker. Mm-hmm. So you can start trimming profits. You can start moving your stop up. Then you can carve off before it curls and takes you down. So that's what I like about it is understanding is the tide going in our favor. It doesn't matter which way the tide's going. We just need to trade with the underlying tide and then wait for a set of waves or a set to roll through and then hop on that asset. And I use ETFs. I only trade ETFs, so there's no individual stocks popping and dropping. I catch the overall momentum of the money moving into the stock indexes or into bonds or into a currency like the dollar index or cash. So I don't even go into individual sectors so much.
Oh, really?
For what we do. We just focus on the four asset classes. We're either long equities, bonds, the dollar, or cash.
And what about like options or other products like that then? Are you just strictly ETFs?
Strictly ETF. So I grew up, I did everything. So the way my brain works is like, I like to learn how to do something really well. I learn every nitty gritty detail. And then after that, I can move on with what I like. So, I mean, I traded penny stocks. I traded small cap stocks. I used fundamentals when I first started. And I've done options, Forex, day trading, scalping. I used to run a futures day trading room. This was years after I blew up my account. and it's just come full circle of like, okay, what do I like? I've done a lot of options, a lot of cover call strategies and all that stuff back in the day. But now it's just like, okay, I just have a lump of capital, my wealth. I just want to manage it. And I don't want anything that's crazy. I just want to know if the stock market tide is going up, I want to own the indexes. If it's going down, I want to move into a different asset that has no correlation that can move up on its own, and I'll move to that. So generally the way it works is I always want to be long equities, which is the most volatile asset. And then of course, if they're not favorable, I move to bonds, which moves slower. If bonds aren't favorable, then we move to the dollar index, which is much, much slower volatility wise. And then we go to just a cash position and just earn no downside risk, just pure interest every day in monthly dividend. So as the markets get crazier, we're actually moving to slower and slower things, which is the opposite of what most people do. Most people like big volatility. People are like, whip out the options and the triple leverage ETFs. Right. And they like, you know, they blow their brains out with all the excitement. But like the stock market and volatility, it's just like one of those purpley blue bug zapper lights. Soon as there's volatility, it like sucks in the aggressive traders, the gamblers, and they're like, how can I make as much money as I can in this? Which I do the exact opposite. I'm like, okay, the killer light is out. Volatility is out to kill. Let's step away and just continue to grow our wealth, but slowly until the volatility and the uncertainty passes.
But that's the boring way of doing it, right?
100%. It's like watching paint dry, but it works. The nice thing is it's consistent. Mm-hmm. So that's
having consistency in something like that, I think just helps build confidence in it. And then the more confidence you have, sure, then the more you can execute that strategy in a better way. Like you're more faithful to it and less likely to slide stops or to take a flyer on something, because you know, why would you jeopardize something that is proven and has history that works?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So talk to me about how you got into technical analysis then, because I'm guessing where your initial introduction to the stock market is probably focused more on fundamentals.
Yeah, so it was. It was 100% on fundamentals. I didn't even know what technical analysis was when I started. It wasn't until the whole tech bubble started to burst and I'm buying these companies that were doing really well. They had quarterly earnings growing, yet the stock price was getting absolutely slaughtered. And I'm like, this makes no sense. Like I'm like very logical. I'm like a scientist. I'm like, okay, there's a huge disconnect here. These companies are strong and growing, yet the share price is going down. And then as I start searching it and like how to do better fundamental analysis, I stumbled across something that talked about technical analysis. I'm like, ooh, what's that? And of course, I learned about John Murphy. He's got like the biggest Bible of technical analysis. I think it's out there. Maybe. Anyway, read the Bible of that, got hooked into technicals and realized, hey, I can identify trends. Mm-hmm. And every market is kind of interwoven in some way. If one asset class is going up, there's another one probably going down because money's getting drained from that one and moving into a different one, or vice versa. So that was, you know, his book really showed me all the different relationships between like utilities and what they mean to investors versus like small cap stocks and gold. And there's risk on and risk off assets and all kinds of different stuff. And then, of course, chart patterns and identifying trends. So that was when I started to move into it, which was like 2001, 2002 is when I was like, OK, I like this. Now that I know something's going down, I don't even want to buy stocks. Right. Like, it totally changed my view. Before I was like, oh, this stock looks like a great buy. Look how cheap it is. It keeps going down. As soon as I learned technical analysis, I'm like, holy crap, the last thing you want to do is buy that. Right. Like, if anything, you want to short it.
Let's wait till this takes a monthly swing high first before we start trying to get on the other end of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So John Murphy kind of got me hooked into that. And I've never looked back since. I don't do any fundamentals. I don't really care about the news. It's just pure identify a trend, identify if it has a lot of power behind it. Is it a set of waves, like a big swell? And if it is, let's hop on board and then manage our position from there.
Yeah. Do you completely discount or do you not look at fundamentals at all anymore? Or did you find some aspects of that you still do kind of like and pay attention to?
No, zero. I just purely price, 100% price and sentiment. I gauge sentiment. I've built a lot of different indicators that allow us to track money flows in and out of different asset classes and even sectors, individual commodities. So knowing what people are doing or thinking is huge. And when you track the money flows of how much is going and where into all the different types of defensive or aggressive assets, it kind of tells us, is this a big move? Is this just an emotional trader move? Like, is it institutional? And so we can identify those. And so I use sentiment. And sentiment is, the nice thing about volume flow is it's not what people are just thinking, it's actually what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So if you know what they're doing, then you've got very good conviction of what they're thinking because you know where they're moving their money. And the money is always, you know, put your money where your mouth is.
Volume's like the fuel for those moves, right? When you start seeing volume picking up, that just tells you that there's strength to it.
Yeah, it tells us there's current, there's a lot of power, and
And get out of the way. Get on the way or catch the wave, one or the other.
Yeah, exactly.
There's one other thing that you mentioned in your introduction to yourself there about being an introvert, and that's something that I've always identified as. And I'm curious if, because like being on a podcast, going out and being on the face, like you've been on like some like TD Ameritrade's network, other podcasts, like, is that difficult for you? Do you actually take a lot of joy in like these speaking engagements?
Okay, so it used to scare the hell out of me.
Right?
Yeah, so initially I was completely terrified. I didn't do any of these initially. So this is about 7 years ago now. I started going, long story short, I was supposed to do a speech at my sister's wedding. This is like high level. Mm-hmm. And when it was my turn to do the speech, I was too scared to do it.
Oh, right.
And I felt so bad for not saying something on my sister's like super special day. So my punishment was to go to Toastmasters and force myself to do it. And I went to Toastmasters for 3 years to try to build up confidence to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I did finish a couple programs there. And then I ended up doing my first interview. I think it was actually with TD Ameritrade. This is years ago.
Yeah.
And I was scared out of my mind. And now it's comfortable. Now I've got a studio in my office. I can just kind of throw stuff on, and I love them. They're super fun, but it totally freaked me out and was very uncomfortable, but you get used to it.
I can tell you the same thing. Like, luckily when I started this initially, I had a friend to lean on. So like any of the interviews that we did, I was always tagging him along, even though I was doing most of the conversations in there. Like he was my safety blanket. Like if I didn't have him there, then what do I do?
Exactly. Yeah. So it was difficult. I mean, right. I just came back from the Toronto Money Show. Did two big presentations there. And first one, I was scared out of my mind on the main stage and everybody that was there. And then the second one on the following day was amazing. A much more kind of closed room, quiet. You could ask questions and really mingle with people.
Yeah.
And it was the first time ever I totally embraced and loved it. Like we had fun, we were laughing. Mm-hmm. So this past weekend, I don't know when this is coming out, but was a huge turning point for me in terms of public speaking and being able to talk, you know, in the living flesh.
Are those out there recorded somewhere?
They are not recorded. No, they don't record those.
Ah, oh, dang. Okay, I was going to say, I'll put links up to them if they were. That's right. We'll link your first performance on TD Ameritrade and let people see the difference, right?
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So did you have any mentors, anything when you were growing up in the markets here? Or were you all self-taught?
Mostly self-taught. So I followed, I had a friend in my town who I met at a Vest Tools workshop in 2000. Mm-hmm. Him and I ended up bumping into each other at this place in Toronto. And then we found out we're from the same town. So him and I started buying every trading course we could buy. And we just split on it and we'd both learn it together. So we kind of like mentored ourselves. He's 25 years older than I am. So he'd already been trading for a long time. So I got lots of kind of some mentoring from him. He's very short term. I started to go more longer term. I didn't want to do day trading or options. He's very options driven. But in terms of mentoring, I think I just watched and took a lot of different courses. So everybody was mentoring. I mean, I took a course from Fausto Pliegas. He's for Cyber Trading University. I took all his courses on day trading. And I still day trade. When there's a huge rally or not, I'll jump in and trade an E-mini just at the closing bell for the last 20 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
You can usually stick a trade in there and make a quick 800 or 1,000 or 2,000 bucks in like a couple minutes. Just on has to be a huge sell-off day or a huge rally day. And
try
I'm usually the guy on the opposite side catching the end of the day, like everybody covering their shorts or getting out of their longs.
I know what trade you're looking at.
But that's my little signature sweet spot, like just like icing on the cake, my adrenaline rush.
Right. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about what you're doing then at Technical Traders then. I mean, I think you mentioned in the very beginning that you found a company that was doing signals and you thought, oh, signals, that's kind of the area I want to focus on. We talked a little bit pre-show here, and I've been pretty vocal throughout the history of this show about not liking signals. And I'll explain my reasoning. My reasoning is that I want to know how to do it. If I'm going to be signing up for somebody's service, I don't want to be dependent on that service. Like I want to know how the inner workings of how it works. So talk to me about how your approach to signals are, and then I'll let you provide the counterpoint if you want to, you know, sell me on something that I've been pretty outspoken against.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. And it all really comes down to your mind. I'm the same. If I'm going to do something, I want to know why, and I want to know the details, and I like to learn it.
I've seen too many people get their tools cut off too in some scenarios, and then they're just left, you know, like, what do they do? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, I've been running the newsletters for like 20 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, the way that what I do at Technical Traders is, so I've kind of migrated. I used to do small cap stock trading and all that stuff, and now I've moved away from active trading and active traders, and really all I do now is I just manage my own capital and what I trade with my portfolio using the asset revesting strategy, just rotating into a different asset when one falls out of favor. I just share those signals of what I do with my followers. So those are the signals. They're literally just copying what I do. I ride the coattail of the markets. They ride my coattails.
But this is less of a like, oh, you know, flash an alert at 12:50 p.m. by whatever.
No, equity. I mean,
it's not necessarily
it's
like
totally
that.
The opposite. So who I'm. Okay. Yeah. So what okay. I do is my signals are end of day. So after all my data mm-hmm. updates for my strategies, then I can see, OK, did we have a new signal? If we do, I send out an update in the evening saying, hey, tomorrow at the open, we buy half of our portfolio in SPY ETF, half our portfolio in QQQ. At 9:30 at the opening bell with the market order. Once we all get into that trade, I send out an update. Okay, we're now long. You should have a price roughly here. This is our stop. Here's our first target, how much to sell. And then I more or less just walk people through the trades as they go. Now, again, I'm only catching these like 5 to 12 waves that roll through the market every year. So we only have like 5 to 12 trades a year. We're not active trading. We're not buy and hold. And we don't diversify. We hold whatever asset has the strongest trend. And we just hop on that with an ETF. So we have a very simple portfolio. It's like one or two ETFs open at a time. Mm-hmm. And we just go that way. So it is very different. I don't share the secret sauce because there's a ton that goes into these signals. And really my core focus, the people who get the most out of it, the people I can help most are people who have quite a bit of money and they don't have time and they just don't want to learn the markets. They want it done for them. So
yes.
They either want to just copy the trades or we have auto trading where it can automatically just execute the strategy in their portfolio.
So what do you have for me then, the person like me who wants to know a little bit more about what's going on behind the trade, the reasoning behind it, rather than just this thing flashed?
Yeah. So, I mean, the book explains kind of how I go about the markets. We identify stages and cycles
which book is this?
Asset Revesting.
Okay.
Yeah. So it talks...
Because you have two of them.
Yeah, there's also Technical Trading Mastery, 7 Steps to Win with Logic, okay. Which if you're more of a shorter-term trader, the technical trading book has a short-term strategy and a custom indicator that you can make on any platform using New York Stock Exchange volume. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. I talk about it all the time because it allows us to see like everybody's emotions for the day. We're like, look at everybody's super greedy. They're like, the market's going to pull back. It gives us these amazing 30-minute chart pivot high, pivot lows. Great for like 1 to 5 day trades. But anyway, for somebody like you who wants to know the nitty gritty, every trade, why did we do this? Where's this? I'm really just not for you. Like you're not going to get the fine details. So I keep it very close, mm-hmm. very protected. We have a certain amount of people that we're going to allow have, you know, access to what we're doing just to protect it. Cause we do have a lot of money being auto traded and managed. So it's really for somebody who doesn't want to learn. They want just a different strategy with some of their wealth managed differently.
And also to have some sort of hand in what's actually happening too, I think.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's a little bit more than just hiring somebody to go make all the decisions. They still at least get to pull the trigger on the decisions.
Yeah, you can pull the triggers if you want to place the trades yourself. So you can skip ones if you want or alter whatever. Mm-hmm. So you do have control over the trades if you don't want it auto-traded for you. It really is just another strategy if you wanted to add diversification to how your money is managed. Like, I don't believe the buy and hold your money is even managed. They really literally just park right. it and let you ride that roller coaster. What I do is like, I take a chunk of money and I manage it like it's my own because it is my own. Like, you're literally riding right. my coattails. So that is like, I take very big pride and take it seriously. And I try to make us as much money as I can with the lowest risk and the fewest trades possible. And that's what I've just kind of devised. So the strategy that I use, this asset revesting strategy, is what I started in 2001. It's been like an evolution of mm-hmm. how that strategy evolves. It's based around cycles and trends and momentum and intermarket analysis or intermarket analysis of how all the different assets between risk on and risk off are related. And when we understand all these things, it gives us price, it gives us time, and it gives us sentiment. So it gives us, I call it a three-dimensional view on the market. Most people use indicators with price and volume, mm-hmm. and all the indicators are pretty much based on that. So I take it to a third dimension. We want price, time, and sentiment. And that gives us a really good three-dimensional view of like, this is a beautiful, clean wave. It's got lots of power. Let's move in on this. And it really helps make a big difference between just chasing chart patterns. Here's a breakout and here's a breakdown or a shakeout or fake out or all that stuff, right?
Right. Well, I like that there's limited number of tradings. Like if people are with your services, they're not glued to their monitors trying to figure out, you know, when they're going to do something. It's all end of day, set up for tomorrow kind of stuff. I can get behind that. I'm not gonna bash that too much.
So I mean, earlier you were talking about how it's nice to take a week off, right? So the nice thing is,
we're
in cash about 40% of the year between trades, waiting, mm-hmm. just floating out there like a surfer, waiting for that next wave. So we have no downside risk, and we're just slowly growing our account for, you know, 40% of the year. And so, for example, a few weeks ago, we got out of a trade. I'm like, this is perfect. This is like end of summer. It's beautiful weather. Our strategy, we can see trades coming usually days or weeks in advance. So there's no like mm-hmm. quick alert, like I didn't expect this. And I told everybody, I'm like, I got this. I'm watching the markets. We have no trades for at least 2 weeks based on everything going on. Just go enjoy the summer. And I keep them updated with, you know, a daily pre-market video to keep you in tune with the nitty gritty, fine details of everything. But you don't have to watch them. You don't have to do it, you know, but so we're always rested.
That's all the stuff for me.
Yeah, exactly.
The guy like me who wants to know what's going on and to try to learn more about what you're actually doing. Yeah. It sounds like the books are an excellent resource for that too. So can you tell me the name of the second one again that you mentioned?
It's called Technical Trading Mastery, 7 Steps to Win with Logic.
Okay, that's a book that I'm interested in. I'm going to get my hands on that. And probably going to have to bring you back to talk a little bit more about it once I do actually get through it. Let's talk a little bit more then about the blog that you have on there. There's also some content that you guys create on the website. Tell me what kind of stuff goes out on there.
So I post a lot of the interviews I do with a lot of different news sites to share kind of my insights going on. But we also try and post some kind of evergreen, timeless content that's educational. Mm-hmm. One of the ones that I find gets a ton of attention, everybody loves, is one on your personality. So one of them is called, I think, if you just search in my name and type in like investor personality or something, my article mm-hmm. will pop up on the Technical Traders. It's about Myers-Briggs. Have you know the Myers-Briggs personality test?
Yeah, like the IJNTs or whatever.
Do you know what you are? Yeah.
I know I'm introverted. I don't remember what the Briggs one was. Right. I've done a couple of them over the years, but they kind of blur together.
So I ended up writing an article about this because I find it's very important to understand your personality type, how your brain perceives and reacts to things, because emotions are mm-hmm. the number one killer. Everybody skips trades. They don't get out of trades. They don't take partial profits. I mean, they chase things like FOMO. Like, emotions are the number one killer of everyone when it comes to trading and investing. So, you know, I wrote this article saying, hey, there's 16 personality types and there's 13 of them, which is 81% of people have the 13 that don't bode well, like free to manage or trade your own money. If you more or less have an mm-hmm. S or an F, which is sensing or feeling, or both of them, which is like, you got a real uphill battle. You're always sensing something bad's going to happen. You feel like a market top's coming. Like, you just the way your brains perceive things make it very difficult to follow even a strategy. And so if you do this test, read it. I mean, I find it's really good. Like, I share my personality type with friends and family and be like, this is how I function. This is how I work. I'm an INTJ. Mm-hmm. The stock market is my sweet spot. I'm called the scientist or the architect. I mean, I'm all logic. I love steps and rules. I'm a pilot. So I grew up, I got my pilot's license when I was 16. So I'm all about checklists. I mean, everything is an SOP, mm-hmm. a standard operating procedure, and everything's just followed. And I run very emotionless in the market just because I've always done it. And I know as soon as I step off this checklist, I'm going to blow an account up. So I totally just focus on the rules, and I don't care how much I don't want to get into this trade. If my strategy says get in, everything says it, I do it. And that's just the way I am now. So I don't really care what's going on. I follow my strategy. Yeah. So we provide content like that. We talk about drawdowns. So many people don't know what a drawdown is. In fact, there's two types mm-hmm. of drawdowns. People don't know the other one. The second drawdown is how much time we're wasting, how much time of a drawdown. And the crazy thing is, it doesn't matter how much we make. If you can trade and invest properly, we can always make our money back. But getting stuck in a 13 or 16 year drawdown or 5 year drawdown, I mean, that's the most valuable thing we have is time. And the buy and hold strategy, like, the reality is you will never retire early with the buy and hold. You need the 40 years because 25 of those are just wasted time of the markets not going anywhere.
Right.
And so the whole strategy that I developed is we have no really downtime. We're either slowly earning interest or we're in an asset going up. Whereas like everybody else gets stuck with these drawdowns and they burn decades for no reason other than they just don't know better. And the financial mm-hmm. industry is totally built for the buy and hold, diversified, dump your money in, forget it. So we have content like this that teaches you about that, and other ones like sequence of returns risk, number one killer reason why people run out of money in retirement. The problem is you don't know about it until it's actually already happened. And then you're like, what the heck? So we try to provide this insight on the blog. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like 90% of the things you run into in trading are things that you didn't know about, at least when you're starting out.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I like what you were saying about the INJT, at least you're like, but you're, how you're explaining the way you think about things. And like, I've always been extremely logical. Emotions have been something that like either I've discounted in the past or not really given too much credence to. But I've found that as I've been engaged with the markets, I'm becoming a lot more in tune with emotions that I didn't even realize were there.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that even if you are a logical person, there's still some value in understanding how those emotions and things come into play, because even if you feel like you're a robot sometimes, which sometimes I feel like I am, definitely not the case.
No, it's, it's difficult. I'm a super emotional person, but when it comes to the markets, I have hurt myself enough times that I try to stick with it, but there's no doubt we'll get in, like there'll be a new trade and I'll like tell everybody, I'm like, we have a new signal. I'm not super comfortable going into this, but technically huge money is flowing and we should follow this wave. Generally it pans out. And so that's just, you have to bite the bullet.
And that's one of the other hard things I think for people to wrap their heads around is like the same thing with like something like quantum mechanics, where you're used to seeing a defined inputs lead to a defined output. And in the stock market, it's all about probabilities. Like you look for these patterns and these patterns may give you a 60% chance that it's going to go in your favor.
Yeah.
That means you're still going to lose 40% of the time.
Yeah.
And it's hard to mentally prepare for taking losses in a large percentage of your trade.
Losses suck. Nobody likes them. And I always tell people like when we get out of a loss, I more or less can congratulate everybody because, hey, we got out of it. We have cut our loss and now we can just relax. Like it's done.
That's such a great mindset.
Like
shift the focus from being a negative to being a positive.
If you you are managing your money. And if the markets keep falling, you're good. If they turn around and start to head higher, we get another signal, we'll get back in. Who cares? Yeah. It's not about missing out on gains. It's about protecting ourselves from big losses that drag out drawdowns and time and money and all that stuff. So
it's funny how many years I've been listening to people talk about that. And now it's like this year, I think, is when it's finally starting to click. Yeah. Like what that really means.
Yeah.
Like, we're not looking to catch every wave. You watch those surfers and we go back to the point you had earlier. Yeah. How many waves are they letting pass them by?
Yeah. Tons.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then as investors and traders, like that's the way we need to think about things. We're not trying to ride every wave.
Because
if you get stuck on a crap wave and a big one comes from behind it and you're out of position, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You're going to miss it.
Yeah.
man, this has been a really fun conversation, Chris. Do you have anything else that you want to point out or talk about here before we wrap things up?
I think we covered a lot. I mean, I'm a big fan of like slower trades. Obviously, I'm more like, you know, you have day trading, then you have swing trading and then position trading and then like buy and hold. So I have naturally gravitated to the fewer the trades, the better, because there's all kinds of studies saying the more active you are, the higher probability you'll lose money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I like kind of position trading because not a whole lot of people do it because it's kind of like watching paint dry and you're not super active. But the nice thing is every time these waves roll by, we have that high consistency of like pulling money out. A few months later, we pull more money out. A few months later, it's really, really nice after a while. But
it's not sexy to hear initially, but man, it sure feels good when you're cashing those checks.
Yeah. And nobody likes it. But I really focus on people who value consistency and they value capital protection. There's waves that roll through the market every year that have to do with economic data that's always coming out, payroll, people automatically depositing into the stock market. So there's all kinds of underlying cycles at play that come in, and position trading catches those. So they're not just chop, like small waves, like swing trading, which is more noise. There's lots of opportunity in swing trading, but the position trading are like these nice rolling waves. The average trade lasts about 40 days, 41 days. Some of them last 3 or 4 months, 5 months. So that's the type of trade I like. They get on them or like chill and scaling out.
Don't have
out.
To think
so
about it.
It's boring, but it feels great. So,
Yep. I know exactly what you're talking about. Where can people find the books again? The website, anything else you want to point people towards?
Yeah. So Asset Revesting and Technical Trading Mastery are on Amazon, anywhere pretty much, or chapters. You can get it pretty any bookstore, I think. And website is thetechnicaltraders.com. And YouTube is the Technical Traders as well. I've got a channel there to watch some analysis of how I view the markets.
Oh, excellent. So good. Perfect. I'll make sure all those links in the episode descriptions. I got to say thank you, Chris, here for donating your time and everybody listening who stuck around to the end here. If you do want to learn more about Chris and what he does, make sure you visit that website, thetechnicaltraders.com. And from there, you can find links to the blogs, the books, asset reinvesting, and technical trading mastery. Also find the YouTube channel. Is the YouTube channel linked on the website too?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, if it's not, it'll be linked in the episode description so people can find it there. You can find us at banditraderspodcast.com, where you can browse our huge back catalog by guests or check out all the amazing deals and discounts we've collected over the years. And I will be back soon with another exciting episode. But until then, reinvest in us by smashing that like button and have a great day.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.